WBR Fairfax Radio. I'm Sue Bartholomew. Welcome to On the Commons. On the Commons with me today is quite a remarkable lady, and she is probably the only single homeowner out there who has managed to get the real government involved in protecting her rights in an association. Joining me on the Commons today is Monica Sadler. Monica, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, I'd like to say it's my pleasure, but it's good to talk to you, but it's not a good topic, perhaps, for most people.
No, it isn't. But you know what? 50 million people are affected by this, and 50 million people, well, maybe not all 50 million of them are in, you know, it being squeezed at the moment, but it could happen.
Well, if it can happen to me in Illinois, I'm sure it can happen to anybody anywhere, and I hate to sound negative. I don't want to start off on a negative note, but it is a really serious problem. And I guess what I've done in Illinois, I have to say that nobody would start off intentionally to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars or years of their life, because I'm looking at January 23rd, I'll begin my 8th year of trying to right the wrongs here in Illinois. And it's been horrible, but it's something that needed to be done, issues that needed to be addressed for years. And I guess the important thing to point out is people say we're all just one election away from possible disaster or whatever, but in this particular case, it took about 30 years for the problems to manifest themselves. And I guess my point would be that they do eventually manifest themselves, and how you can address them when they become a problem and what it takes to protect your rights and maybe the rights of the people that you care about in your own family. I would say, in all honesty, you need to be prepared to spend years of your life and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And that's just the bottom line.
When you say 30 years to manifest themselves, are you talking about your association or just associations in general?
Well, I guess I could make a generalization that it has taken years for some problems to manifest themselves nationwide, but in our particular case, the development that we're having the problems in was planned in the early 1970s, and it was a situation where actually International Paper Company came into the Midwest doing business as a wholly owned subsidiary and I called American Central. And I guess before I get too far out there, I don't know how nationwide this might be, but I did run across some things preparing for your show today. And it said in one of these documents that I got out of the land records from 1971 that this company that developed Oak Run also was developing 11 other vacation home site developments that were actively in progress, located in Delaware, Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. Apparently there are 43 that have been completed or not begun. Well, this came out of information from an annual report from 1970 for International Paper Company. And I have to preface all my comments by saying my poor husband said before, he's at a golf meet with my son, don't take on International Paper Company. And that's not what I'm trying to do. But I think what's important for everyone to understand is the background of how this whole process got started and how associations came into being. And I know you've done a lot of research, and I have too. We started out with problems in Oklahoma in the mid-80s, and that's how I became involved with CAI and educated myself and lots of other things. But the point is, it took those problems in Tulsa manifested themselves immediately. And the problems in the development in Illinois that we're in, I have to admit that we bought our property, and the first property, we owned four properties when this started, and this one development started in 19, we bought in 1990, and it wasn't until January of 1997 that then you know what hit the fan. And I tried for about 5 months. I went through all the public agencies that I could. I tried to exhaust all those administrative remedies that I could find. I spent 5 months trying to avoid filing the first lawsuit. And it became a necessity. And I think I went into it after having had 5 years of a nightmare experience in Tulsa. That eventually took me to Washington, D.C., and to make that long story short, it was a developer that was a federal bank, the biggest savings and loan in Arkansas, and everybody knows what happened to the savings and loan industry, but those were some of the developers in the 80s of these kinds of developments. But I guess the point of the whole, my visit with you today is to try to help people understand what it takes to protect your rights and address them. And I guess the lesson I learned from Tulsa is that nothing really good happened in that case. We hired a lawyer because I'd never even been in a lawyer's office till 1985. But long story short, after 5 years, I ended up going to Washington, D.C. and talking to the Consumer Affairs Director for the Federal Home Loan Bank Board. And it wasn't until I went to Washington, D.C. that anything good started to happen. I also used an archaic Oklahoma statute to convene a grand jury. And the DA investigated, and this grand jury investigated this big developer savings and loan. But the things that I did,
so
I,
basically,
well, in 1985, I had a lot more energy, obviously, than I do now. But the things that I did, I had to do. And we ended up going from being sued for $33.6 million by the savings and loan. They claimed I had defamed them by exposing what they'd done to our family, to getting our money back. They had to buy our house back, and we were going to go off and live happily ever after and move back to Illinois, and swore we would never buy in another HOA-governed development. And we did. So,
wait a minute, Monica, can I stop you there for a moment?
Sure.
Going back to Oklahoma, you actually got the DA involved in that case?
Right. I was able to convene a grand jury was already convened for some other purpose. And in Oklahoma at the time, there was a statute that said you could convene a grand jury by petition. So I, the other family that was with us, my husband had bought the first of a 98-unit, zero-lot line development. It was a gated development with a guard, little guardhouse, and, you know, 100% maintenance and everything. But we were able to collect enough signatures to have the grand jury investigate this developer. And it really, I think the turning point in that case was that I traveled to Washington, D.C., and the Consumer Affairs Director said, you need to send me a Freedom of Information Act request. And what came out of my request was that the government had done a little internal investigation of the savings and loan and found out that not only had we been defrauded, but their business practices were beyond unethical. And I took that information to the grand jury, and I'd like to say, I don't know, the best analogy would be that they ran those guys out of town on a rail. But there's no way to get back 5 years of your life, and at that point, we were really naive, and when we went into settlement negotiations, we spent 9 hours in mediation, and at the end of the day, we were all going to never speak to each other again, at least our side, and the other side, they just, you know, it was terrible, but I told them that I was going to do exactly what Johnny Booker, this great woman in Washington, D.C., told me to do, and I'm not trying to witness to you or any of your other listeners, but she told me to go home and put this in the Lord's hands. And I'll tell you what, when I told the mediator to go back and tell the bad guys that I was going to put this in the Lord's hands, they couldn't write the check fast enough. So I looked at your promo today and I thought, gosh, what does it take to get this job done? And I have to say, you have to have faith. You have to be persistent. I learned one thing from Tulsa, and that was persistence pays off. And I always quote to my son, you know, that Abraham Lincoln, and since we're in the land of Lincoln here in Illinois, there's this saying, he says, the probability that we shall fail in the struggle should not deter us from the support of a cause we believe to be just. Well, I've gotten myself in a lot of trouble by trying to right the wrongs, and I don't know if some of your listeners would remember that I've been sanctioned $143,000 because I have really tried to right the wrongs. As a matter of fact, the judge's ruling said that my quixotic crusade to right all perceived wrongs, you know, and that's what I've tried to do, and I'm being punished for doing that. So I guess what the answer to the question of what would it take to get these public officials involved is, I think what happened for me, I know it's not this simple, but I like to use visual aids. And in this case, I think that the answer is toilet paper. And I went into the state's attorney's office with an argument, and I towed my mother and my husband along. My husband did sit there, and he asked Paul Mangieri, who's the state's attorney, and he has really tried to do a good job. My husband had served on a board in Hawaii, said, you know, Paul, how does it feel to have these guys sit in your face? You know, that they're just blatantly violating the law. And he kind of looked at him, and he said, well, that's why I think we need a bipartisan effort to, you know, address the situation. And this was just before the elections. And so to make the long story short, I used the symbolic gesture of toilet paper to symbolize that our rights, or my statutory rights, are worth absolutely nothing. They might as well be written on toilet paper without someone to enforce them. And, you know, my lawyer told me not to make that analogy. My mom and my husband, everybody thought I just really shouldn't, you know, I should give up on that. I've been known to show up at public hearings with tar and feathers for lawyers who try to take their...
I remember that, property. Yeah.
I've done, you know, I guess it's not about getting attention. What it's about is
making
giving
a point.
Them something to remember. And I have a friend here in Illinois that says we have to tune into their radio station, WIFM. You know, what's in it for me? And I think what I was able to convince my state's attorney of is that he has an opportunity to do something very important, and something important to, you know, hopefully that other elected officials will follow his lead. And this is a guy who, he was a JAG officer, and when he ran for state senate, and I think maybe someday this guy will end up our governor in Illinois, but he said that one of his, I was looking at all his little campaign things, and I took it to my meeting with him when I was asking for his help, and I kind of waved it at him, and I said, remember, Paul, that you said, well, first of all, he made history in being the first Democrat to be elected to a state's attorney's office in this county. So anyway, on some of his campaign literature, it said, strong leadership is not only about taking responsibility for your own actions, but it's also about holding those under you accountable. And
I like that.
Yeah, and some of it, another one says, this other one is, oh, and he's such a handsome man. Hopefully you'll get to meet him someday. But anyway, it says, Paul Mangieri stands for those who need an advocate. Paul Mangieri stands up to corruption and how he'd aggressively fought against corporate crime and political corruption. So I saved all this stuff because I wanted to remind him that he had a job to do and that it was his duty to investigate the violations of the law by my homeowners association and to enforce the state statutes. And he actually has done a pretty good job so far. We've only been in hearings this one day, and it's been continued to October 29th. But the other side is trying to bring in, just all kinds of irrelevant things. And the fact that my HOA sued me they developed a policy after my statutory request began. And about a year into my requests, which were made for proper purposes and in writing and all sorts of things.
Can we let the listeners know what that request was? I know what it is, but...
Oh, the members... I had been requesting the membership list because the initial conflict in our property owners association was that my next-door neighbor wanted to build a second house on their property, and because our covenants provided for only one house, everyone was against it. There was a huge furor in this neighborhood, in the whole development, but apparently the association attorney, who also had property at Oak Run, had a different opinion, and he decided that we tried to settle the case, and I'll cut to the chase. I tried for 5 months to avoid filing that very first lawsuit because I knew that usually the lawyers are the only ones that get ahead in these things, and I think there's a quote in one of Wayne Hyatt's books that says something like, Ambrose Bierce, something like, litigation is a machine where you go in a pig and you come out a sausage. Well, there's the other one that's something about it's better to be a cat or a mouse in a cat's mouth than a man in a lawyer's hands. Well, all that's true. So we tried, my lawyer tried to negotiate a settlement for $15,000. A week after the first lawsuit was filed. And what happened was a couple years later, they used that effort to resolve the entire lawsuit as an extortion attempt. So not only did they didn't want the membership to hear from me, that's why they've kept me from having a copy of the membership since 1997. And it's really this, it's taking me years to get someone to help me. The first lawsuit, when I wanted to go to my state's attorney, my attorney told me to leave Paul alone. Let him do his job, which was to go after the bank robbers and the rapists and the child molesters and all that. Well,
but you're a taxpayer and you're being defrauded in your own association.
Absolutely.
Isn't that his job?
Well, yes, and it is. And you know, the interesting thing about this very first case, Shu, is I have to say that, you know, I sincerely believe that litigation always has to be the last resort. I mean, it absolutely has to be. But what happened in my case was this whole conflict started in January of 97, and I started doing my homework, and I had spent years doing legal research, and I have a pretty extensive library, so I made sure that I was on very good ground legally and that we would prevail if it had to come to litigation. So I took some of this information to the zoning administrator's office, and he was going to get an opinion from our state's attorney, same person, Paul Mangieri. And I met with him the 1st of March in 1997, and you know, by the 1st of June, nothing had been done. He hadn't gotten the opinion. They had subdivided their property. They were going forward. They're going to build another house there. And so long story short, I did what I had to do, and then a week later, we tried to end it there, because I know how horrible this is, and it affects your health, it affects your family, it affects the community. I think the longer that it goes on, the more damage there is to the fabric of your community, and really, it's polarized our community in some respects.
I'm in a situation now
where I think I talked to you before. This started out as a very simple legal issue, but then, you know, the first case took on a life of its own, and then I found out that the judge had represented the HOA, and I couldn't figure out why he wasn't applying the law. And I think what people really need to understand is, if you have a problem with your HOA, you have really only one vehicle, and that's the legal system to try to address and protect your rights or to enforce the covenants if you think your neighbor is, you know, going to squeeze another house in there or whatever. And I didn't really understand that the legal system doesn't always work the way it's supposed to for various and sundry reasons, which include incompetence and corruption, and it's a crapshoot. And I really don't know how anyone could have survived as long as I have. As a matter of fact, I was thinking last night, I don't know what the odds are, but if we could get a bookmaker to give us the odds on what are the odds on one woman being ruled against or losing so many times in every case at the trial court level in front of numerous judges and then winning and prevailing on the law at the appellate court. You've done that consistently, haven't you? Right. It's unbelievable. And I guess the thing that upsets me the most about all this and what people need to understand is that the legal system doesn't really work the way it's supposed to. And if your association is funded by, you know, has several million dollars in retained earnings and you're going to use your Social Security benefits to advocate your rights, you're probably not going to last too long, and you're going to get ground into the finely polished marble floors of the local courthouse. And you're only entitled to as much justice as you can are willing to pay for. And that's why I admire people like George and those that will help people like Winona Blevins. I mean, George Andrus in Florida is what I'm talking about. Or, you know, if Marion Rosen hadn't advocated on behalf of Winona, who knows where she'd be right now? She might not have gotten her house back, but
They were taking her to a homeless shelter, her and her cat.
Well, when they filed, I think in my situation, what I didn't understand, I mean, I had no clue that when I got involved in this first lawsuit, that once I did get into the books and records at Oak Run, this was in 1997, I discovered some enormous procedural irregularities, I guess would be the best word for it. And that led to the filing of the second lawsuit that Wayne Hyatt was involved in at the appellate court. And you know, what I'm trying to figure out is, I want people to understand that here I am, a consumer, a homeowner that understands the law, have been blessed that I can hire an expert. I spent $120,000, I think, on that appeal alone of that case. And we've been back from the appellate court almost 3 years now from when Wayne Hyatt and Pete Feuerger with my lawyer locally. And we are still in the pleading stages in that case. And I just got dismissed two more times. And in the inspection case, which is about the membership list, this is the lawsuit that Oak Run had filed against me. I have a counterclaim. And after five and a half years, for some reason, the judge still isn't satisfied with my counter complaint and wants me to replead it again. I mean, I don't know how many people out there can afford to file an amended complaint, let alone a second, third, fourth. I think we're on our fifth amended complaint in some of these cases, and it's absolutely insane because, you know, the pleadings are not that bad. You know, it's the system, and it's the fact that once you discover that there are some problems with one of the local good old boy judges, you might as well just forget about it. They are going to string you up by your ankles and pick your pockets. So,
and that's what's can I stop you right there, because you mentioned George and Winona,
right,
and Marion, and I know that a lot of people probably don't know who we're talking about. George Andrus is the Jupiter flagman who's at risk of losing his house. He's retired, and a retired electrician living on Social Security down in Florida, and he's a retired Marine, and his former Marine, I guess, or a retired Marine or whatever. And his association does not like his flag, and they're threatening to foreclose on him to collect the association's legal fees. And that's one person. Winona Blevins is an 83, well, now she's a little older than that. She was 82 at the time when her association foreclosed her mortgage-free $150,000 home and sold it on the courthouse steps for $5,000. And the first she knew about it was when there was a knock at the door, and there was the sheriff with an eviction notice in one hand and a moving van behind him, and this lady and her cat were evicted. She was allowed to keep one change of clothes. Everything else was taken. And the problem was that the association alleged she owed them $814. She had paid her check. She had written a check. They refused to cash it, preferring instead to foreclose. So these are the people who Monica's mentioning, for
right,
those of you who may not know. I know we have a lot of new listeners who have not been with us all along.
Okay.
We
figured everybody had seen 2020 and had heard, I guess ABC had something on about George Andrus the other day that my mother told me about. And the thing is my mother also, when we had illegal liens filed against us in violation of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, had I not known or understood the law, my mother could have lost her home. We could have counted Betty Anderson among the bodies that, you know, are homeless. And I guess the thing for people to understand is that you need to, first of all, become informed about what the law is and what your rights are and who could possibly help you. But my experience has been, and I'm still working with my Attorney General's office right now. I spent some time in Springfield about a week and a half ago with my lawyer, and we went there because we are expecting them to help us, because when you're a consumer and you've been defrauded, and we're asking them, in our case, our association published and distributed to 3,500 families in 32 states across the country these bogus covenant booklets. And pursuant to those booklets, if you didn't follow the rules and the bylaws and the covenants that they published, you could lose your home. And the point is that I'm trying to get the Attorney General's are at the office to look into a set of circumstances that it's been suggested to me that perhaps would follow the same case scenario as the Melissa Colburn situation out in California with a RICO action in which, in our case, the Property Owners Association would collect these improper assessments, and if you didn't pay them, they would foreclose on you. Now, you have to remember, this is a lawyer who's also a member doing this to the people at Ogrun. And then they would hold these big property auctions, and they would sell these lots at a profit, and the money would go into the general fund. And the thing that upsets me the most, Sue, is I take all this stuff. I mean, I'm hoping the Attorney General's office will make them disclose to all the people that they have sent fraudulent covenant booklets to over the years, and this has been going on since 1987, that they will make them send a notice, kind of a disclaimer type situation that we have defrauded. I think they have to send something that tells you, and the resolutions, they keep mailing resolutions every year to the property owners that are misleading and inaccurate in order to collect millions of dollars over the course of years. And the association has put out some figures, my association, that perhaps the damages in the one case that Mr. Hyatt was involved in are over $5 million, or $4.5 or $5 million. So we're not talking
about
just a few dollars. We're talking about people, elderly people, losing their homes or their property. And it's ridiculous. And I've decided I'm not going to go quietly into the night, and I don't care what they call us. They can call us whiners or crybabies or whatever. I think that someone needs to set an example. And I never, now you have to admit, we're almost 8 years into this, and I haven't tried to draw negative attention to my community. I didn't want that to happen. But as Evan McKenzie's book points out, one of the biggest and most inherent flaws in the whole concept is that we have volunteers, sometimes well-meaning volunteers, and other times I'm not too sure about that, but amateurs who are running these multi-million dollar not-for-profit corporations. And in this particular case, they're violating the law, and Paul Mangieri has stepped forward, my state's attorney, and the law is very clear in the state of Illinois that you, an association or a corporation, shall keep a list of its members' names and addresses, they shall make it available for inspection during reasonable business hours, and they shall provide it to the member if for inspection and copies if you have a proper purpose. And Paul instructed them over a year ago in June of 2002 that they had to provide this list to me for my inspection and copying. Now, remember, I've been trying to get this information since 1997, and I tried to put together a partial list. Everybody always asks me why I don't go to public records and do it. Well, often they're not up to date. They don't reflect who the contract purchasers are and so on and so forth. So I think I spent about $1,128 trying to construct a partial list to do a mailing to the membership to call a special meeting. And the list should only cost me $10.75, the reasonable photocopying charge. So I think you can see where the damages occur. And the only thing I'm asking the state's attorney to do, and everyone else out there, as a matter of fact, is to hold them accountable for what they've done wrong. And in the state of Illinois, this violation of the law is punishable by up to a $1,500 fine. And when I, you know, I had the letter in front of me to Oak Run's manager, and I said, you're willing to risk a $1,500 fine? And he said, that's fine. That's fine. It was okay with him. You know, it's that's obviously not his money. That's
I was
going to
say, it's going to the, it's coming out of the homeowner's pockets, right?
Right, right. And I, you know, I didn't come on your program to bust anybody's chops or to say anything negative about CAI or anything like that. But, you know, I think people need to understand that the only people they can turn to are their elected officials. We need to start going to our legislatures because you can, you know, I mean, I believed all the glossy recruiting brochures that I should join CAI because I'd be among friends, that I'd have a strong national and local legislative voice, and that, you know, they were going to be protecting and enhancing the property for millions of Americans. And I have to be honest with you, I've been ignored. They solicit letters from their members, and they encourage you to write with your problems or issues or anything else. And I think the first time I wrote to them, you were talking about me being a prolific writer in the promo, so I thought I might mention, I started writing to them back in 1998. And my letter was ignored. I asked for their help. As a matter of fact, at the end of my letter, I was looking at it, and I said, you know, please help me. You know, please advise what help you can give to a devoted member of CAI. I didn't even get a response. And so I had an open letter. I think Jan posted it on the CCFA website. Yeah, and to the trustees. And it's just a joke that anybody out there is ever going to help you. No one is going to help you unless you can get your elected officials to do so. You can't use the legal system for obvious reasons. And so I guess that's the most important thing, is the industry's not going to police itself.
No, the industry's, you know, they're the problem. We're going to take a break, okay, and we're going to come back, and we're going to go back and talk about this. And thank you. Stay with us, because we'll be right back with Monica Sadler from Illinois.
Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WEBR Fairfax Radio. Welcome to On the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with us today is Monica Sadler. Monica is a homeowner in Illinois who has spent, I think, 8 years, $500,000, and a lot of sweat equity learning the law, learning what's going on, and trying to make sure that her fellow homeowners in her association are not being gouged. She's also probably one of the few people, maybe the only person that I know of, who has been able to get the state's attorney involved in enforcing Illinois law, not necessarily enforcing the covenants, but enforcing the law. Monica, thanks so much for joining us today.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to confuse the two issues, because the state's attorney actually has filed a criminal complaint pursuant to Illinois statute for Okrun's failure to allow inspection of their books and records. And the covenants, he has absolutely nothing to do. Our county governments, no one ever wants to become involved in enforcing the covenants. And I guess when you think about that, unless you can afford to enforce the covenants, if your next-door neighbor tries to build another house or something like that, the covenants probably ought to be written on toilet paper sometimes, too. But in any event, the criminal complaint was filed last month, and the association pled not guilty. And I think their defense can be capsulized by something to the effect that they have created a resolution that they call the document control policy, and they we call it the Monica control policy, because the association was incorporated for over 20-some years before they needed any sort of policy, and they waited until after a year into my proper statutory request, and two lawsuits had been filed, and I had gotten into some documents that they wished I'd never seen. And so they filed this, they created this policy. The lawyer for the association, whose partner, as a matter of fact, ended up being sued for his own violation. That's kind of a long story. I mean, this one lawsuit spawned several other lawsuits, and it's kind of sad for the community that the lawyers didn't settle the case in 1997, because it would have served everyone's best interest except for their own economic interest. So I guess it's an IQ test. I think consumers need to understand that you might need to get your state's attorneys involved, because the lawyers are just going to turn the files until the cows come home, if they ever do. But no, my state's attorney has filed this criminal complaint, and I guess the big news is, after this was filed and the hearing was set for September 24th, there were three more criminal complaints filed against Okrun, I believe, on September 19th. So not only
by whom?
Their defense was that they could develop this policy, and I live about 60 miles from the office, and their position is that it's reasonable to tell me that my written requests that have not been honored for 5 years, that I have to drive out to Okrun, and that I have to duplicate my request onto a form that you can only get out there or something. It's just ridiculous. And I actually have an expert opinion from a well-known CAI lawyer named Mark Perlstein. And because the document control policy was adopted at a secret meeting, and we got an opinion from Mark Perlstein back in February of 2000, and basically his position was the document control policy is null and void, and it was improperly adopted, and the board cannot develop. There's a hierarchy of authority, and what Paul is trying to enforce against Okrun is the hierarchy of authority for association laws is, first of all, the statutory and common law foundation. And then you go all the way down from the declaration and the articles of incorporation and bylaws and rules, and all the way down to number 7, which is a resolution similar to their policy that they are trying to say controls over the state law. So Paul seems to understand the law a bit better than the HOA lawyers do, and he told them that their document control policy is not controlling, and you cannot refuse to follow the law. And if you do so willfully, it is a Class C misdemeanor and punishable by a fine of up to $1,500. But the problem in this case, and I have to be honest, and maybe I shouldn't get off too far on this, but the judge that's hearing the criminal complaint against Okrun happens to be one of Okrun's former attorneys, and he also happens to be the judge that has sanctioned me $143,000.
Isn't that a conflict of interest?
Yes. Well, the thing is his firm used to represent American Central Corporation back in the 70s and early 80s. I think they left town in about 1980. And the intent of American Central was to market and plat 5,000 lots. And to be honest, Okrun has been a failure, because they only platted and marketed 2,600 lots. I think instead of having a community of 12,000 to 15,000 people that was planned, there are only 500 homes built instead of 5,000. And I think there are about 300 full-time residents instead of 12,000. So they're, you know, it wasn't a very good investment perhaps, but in any event, their firm, this law firm that, that Judge Buckley used to work for, also represented a corporation called Oakview Corporation. And I haven't gotten too much more information other than they were able to purchase blocks and blocks and hundreds of lots from the developer. But there were no maintenance assessments being paid by this corporation. And unlike if my husband would have bought 100 lots, he would have had to have paid 100 maintenance assessments. They were, improperly exempted from the payment of assessments. So after 10 years, when American Central decided to leave the Midwest in 1980, there were no reserves, there were no monies. And so what they did was they tried to improperly amend the documents, and that's exactly what happened, and that's the case that Wayne Hyatt was involved in. But not to get too far afield, one of the reasons why Okrin doesn't want me to get the membership list and to get the word out, because they've been able to only give the property owners in these 32 states the information that they want them to have through their litigation updates and their bogus covenant booklets and things like that. So they really don't want the membership to hear from me. And as a matter of fact, the president testified under oath that he didn't think it was in the members' best interest to hear from Monica Sadler.
I've been denied
the list. So as a matter of fact, this document control policy, I think Benny Cass wrote some really great articles for the Washington Post. And he's a very well-known, he's just a great guy. I really like him. But I was at the law seminar in New Orleans, and I attended this specific session that was about owner versus association lawsuits. And one of the people he represented had a document request that was denied. And
right.
He did a great job. And so there's all kinds of great information out there. If these lawyers, I think the greater good will be served by exposing what's going on in rural Illinois, and hopefully the other 250,000 communities will understand that they have to hire qualified counsel. You can't hire people from within your community and let them run foreclosure factories and not expect to get caught. I mean, it's unfortunately
a lot of the the industry attorneys, the so-called experts in association law, are making a lot of money by foreclosing. So,
I talked to Beanie last night, and if everyone that listens, everybody needs to go to Beanie's website and
HOA.org, right?
Right. And I was amazed. And I think it's going to probably be updated soon, but if that's happening in the Houston area, imagine, it has to be happening. It's a perfect illustration of what's happening everywhere. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It is happening everywhere.
Well, in my situation, we were able to stop, we have temporarily at least stopped the foreclosures, but...
In one association.
Yeah, in one. I guess my position would be, the industry would have you believe that these aren't widespread problems, or that these are isolated incidents. But in our family, we own property in several states and a number of common interest communities. And even if only one of those communities is in crisis, or there are pettifoggers and rogue boards, it only takes one association to ruin your happily ever after. And I was really minding my own business, working in the library, coordinating some volunteer efforts when this hit the fan. And it's not something anyone would go into knowingly. And, you just have to try to avoid litigation. And I think that's why, and I think Benny even touched on this when he was talking about Joe Grillo's case. And that's a great document case, of course. You know, the HOA lawyers don't want anybody to know that they know about these cases, that the law is 100% on Paul Mangieri's side and my side. Now, there isn't a case in the world that says you can deny a member's statutory rights of inspection if they've established a proper purpose. And you just can't keep people from communicating each other and keep them in an isolation booth. But
that's the only way to regulate them. Because the Internet, that's what they did.
Right.
They would tell you, gee whiz, I'm sorry you feel that way, but guess what? You're the only one who feels that way.
No, that's a bunch of baloney.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
Exactly.
I sat back and watched this whole thing. And I mean, I'm not, I really have benefited tremendously from my the resources I've gotten from CAI, and I've gone to law seminars for the past 5 or 6 years. I've educated myself over the last 20 years, not because I wanted to, but because it was necessary. No one has enough money to spend on lawyers. I spent probably 4,000 to 5,000 hours doing legal research years ago, and I had to think that when all this hit the fan again, that maybe I would be able to, you know, we could avoid litigation, and I would be able to use my knowledge from before to help them change their ways, which is what they're saying in this month's Common Ground magazine. The front page is all about boards gone bad. And the interesting thing is that they tell people that if you really want to, you want to correct these things, they don't tell you to go to your elected officials or anything. What they do is they tell you to try to get them to change their ways or to run opposition candidates
right.
or to stage a recall. Well, that's
right.
what we're planning to do. I think we're going to have to educate the membership at Oak Run, and it might take a full year. And then we're going to have to try to get people who are qualified, but
but the thing is, Monica, the fact is that you're going to face a lot of opposition trying to do that, changing the status quo, even though that's what they'll tell you to do and that they'll tell you that that's the way to handle it. That's really not what they want, because the people they've got in power making your life miserable are the people they can control. Somebody
right. well,
like you...
That's not the solution, Shu. The problem that I have with that whole industry argument, and I believe it's 100% bogus, that you should get on the board. And what I think they're doing is, I think they're perpetuating a myth, but I think they're also exacerbating the problem, because what they're suggesting is that you need to get on the board and fix the problem.
Right.
There is never any consideration given to whether or not you should be running a multi-million dollar not-for-profit corporation. And I have to tell you, quite frankly, this community at Oak Run has a lot of empty nesters and older individuals. Some of them have been out there since the late 70s. My mother is 71 years old. She can't run for the board and try to... Well, first of all, the poor thing, I mean, she's been ostracized, and it's like living in a prison for her because she lives her lot. She has a beautiful two-acre lot that's completely surrounded by common property, and they have a new policy that you can't even be on the common property, even though you pay maintenance assessments, unless you pay a new special fee, because they lost the appeal. And, well, Wayne Hyatt, his firm said it's not proper. And, well, it's a long story, but to make a long story short,
they're still doing it.
I've gone to my state's attorney, because this is a group, and these are boards, and these are lawyers that would not treat me fairly. And that's the only thing the experts have been wrong about in the last 8 years, is that after we won our appeal, they said, well, now they're going to have to start treating you fairly. And you know what happened after that? The board member stood up at the meeting and said, and compared me to Hitler and Hirohito and Mussolini, and then said that I was like Satan and Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. This is at a public annual meeting. I'm being blasted. I'm sitting there with my lawyer, and I didn't think we were going to make it out of there, quite honestly. So you have to understand that when you have a problem with your board and you get on the bad side, you are, well, you could become dead meat. I mean, this woman was allowed to circulate a petition. Now, I'm not allowed to have a membership list, but they let this woman circulate a petition that said, it appears that we're going to have to pay this big judge, any judgment by assessment of our property. It's unbelievable, but apparently there were owners of, there are about 2,600 lots. Only 950 of the 2,600 signed it under the false pretense that they would have to pay this $4 or $5 million judgment. But the point is that when this woman was circulating it, she was telling people that Monica Sadler is a plague. And, you know, the board sanctioned this whole petition going out to 3,500 families in 32 states. And she would tell them that she's sure a lot of people would like to see me dead. It's, you know, this, I really don't think people understand how bad it can get.
It is bad. It's really
scary.
Bad.
It is. It's
very, very bad.
Well, if things that happened in Peoria, Arizona happened there, I'm hoping that you know, there won't be things happening anyplace else. But I have had people get it right in front of my face and scream at me that I'm closing the nursing home in our county. And I'm like, what? Excuse me, can I sit down with you and help you understand? Nope, won't happen. But that's why Paul's trying to, I think, do his job. And Shu, the only thing I can do is continue to, you know, just try to fight the good fight. And
let's outline this, because I get a lot of calls and emails from people who are having a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
A number of them are terrified. They just, you know, they don't want to give their names, you know, and they're just afraid of retaliation.
Right.
But it took you, you know, you did your homework.
Right.
You made sure that you knew what you were talking about. You made sure that you had all your I's dotted and your T's crossed. There were no loose hanging ends that could come back and bite you. And
right.
then it took persistence.
Oh, absolutely. And then after that, it took a lot of whining, and it took begging, and it took letter after letter after letter, and fax and phone calls, and it took, I mean, I honestly, Shu, I'm not patting myself on the back, but I honestly don't know anyone else that could or would do. It's a full-time job. I work every morning from 7 in the morning till, I mean, there are some nights that I'm still out in my office at midnight. And, you know, I have, the thing is I've been involved in 5 lawsuits, and only the federal case, because it wasn't in Knox County and because the violations of the federal law were so blatant, they admitted their guilt and they had to pay all the fees to this. I hired this huge firm in Chicago that had actually been involved in another very big Fair Debt case. And anyway, if I hadn't had the knowledge that I had, you know, I guess you can go to your elected officials, but I have to be honest with you. In rural Illinois, I think I can say with 100% certainty that none of the judges, except for one, it's a neighbor of my attorney, as a matter of fact, none of the judges, except for one, and our elected officials don't live in common interest communities. They don't understand
they don't know
what's going on.
They don't know what they're talking about. I mean, they have no idea. They're
right.
clueless.
Well, I've been told by the experts that I'm every attorney's worst nightmare, and that's a client that knows more about the law than they do. But
yeah.
I've been studying it since 1985, and I have, because we have considerable investments all over the country. I mean, I was going through this stuff for a meeting, and there are so many people that I admire. And, of course, I mean, I think Evan's book, Privatopia, is something that people should, you know, just if you have an interest and you want to understand the situation from the beginning, you should start there. But I buy all the law books. I buy all the – I have the – just about everything I think CAI publishes, and I get the Law Journal and the Law Reporter, and I do my homework. I do stay informed, but that doesn't matter. You can be the most sophisticated purchaser, and you can have combed the governing documents with a fine-tooth comb, and you can do everything right, and it won't matter. If they are bound and determined to ignore, well, I think most of the problems comes from, well, look at the CAI poll that said 62%, I think this recent poll said 62% of the people that voted said their directors were ill-informed and they needed to take a class or read a book or, you know, but if 62% of the people that are running these communities are clueless, that translates into more than just isolated problems.
Oh, it's the problems are rampant. I got a lot of interest and a lot of feedback just from putting out the promo announcing that you would be on. And one of the emails I got was from a lady in North Carolina who says she was just, you know, staggered. $500,000. Oh, my. How in the world can anyone afford to go after an HOA if it takes that much money? Now I'm afraid of what I got us into by going to court to save freedom of speech and our good name. And
well,
so basically it's scary for people.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, Sue, over $1 million has been spent on legal fees. And it was really interesting because the HOA lawyers, at every annual meeting, they would give a breakdown for each of the 4 cases that Oak Run was involved in. And the first case was about the resubdivision controversy and my neighbor building 2 houses and all that. And they participated in the attempted violation. Here they have governing documents that require an architectural control committee to have written, you know, you have to make a written request and approve it. They didn't even follow their own governing documents. And long story short, that case started, but then it led to the assessment controversy. Then Oak Run sued me to keep me out of the records. And then I sued one of the partners in the law firm that represents our HOA because he was violating the governing documents. He had an illegal outbuilding, and he built a dock and a deck on his neighbor's property and then told his neighbor that he wasn't going to move it because he got permission from Oak Run to put it there, and he'd take him to the Supreme Court. So when the guy contacted me and asked me for help, I tried to help him. Now, I will say to the gal in North Carolina, it's a nice idea to try to help your neighbors, but that case has been going on since May of 1998, too, and I've already been to the appellate court because even though our governing documents say that any owner can enforce the covenants, for some reason the judge read the same provision and said I didn't have any standing as an owner to enforce the covenant. So it's kind of scary. These are the same judges that are sitting on murder trials in Illinois, but we've got a problem. And I guess the last thing I will point out is you can go to your elected officials and go to your legislatures, and that's where we need to go, because those who are delegated the duty to protect us from incompetent or dirty judges and bad lawyers, pettifoggers, are not doing their job. I have filed complaint after complaint, and they close the files. I can tell them that I have evidence that they've created manufactured evidence or secreted evidence or filed false affidavits or, heck, we had a public hearing where this lawyer who had, you know, was, abusing his next-door neighbor, was sitting there, and the special appellate prosecutor turns to the zoning administrator and tells him that this guy's lying. He had created false evidence. So I go to the disciplinary commission, and I march downtown to Chicago, which is about 3 hours from my home, and they actually said, I overheard someone say as I was leaving, so did you get rid of her? So if that's the way they're treating people, yeah. You know, did you get rid of her? I mean, can you imagine our elderly people that are trying to go to these people to protect their rights or to make complaints? And I've spent years trying to get them to do something. And heck, I think they just are hoping that our elderly people will die before they have to address their complaints. It's terrible. It's incredible. It's awful.
I agree. Monica, we're out of time, but thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experience and hopefully giving people out there, you know, the encouragement and the know-how, basically, of trying to put together their own cases, of trying to make sure that their tax dollars actually work for them, mm-hmm. because they're being ripped off, and you've done a great job. And I wish you all the very best.
Thank you. This is the best part of HOA hell, is meeting people like you, and I can't wait to come to Washington. I'm looking forward to it.
I am, too.
And, we're going to make a difference. We're going to start making a lot of noise, and we're
going to... Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, well, thanks for your time.
Well, thanks a lot, MJ, and thanks to all of you for hanging out on the Commons with us today. Please join us on the Commons every Saturday, same time, same place. Stay tuned, stay free. See you all next week. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See you all next week.